You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th. Only on Hulu.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Church and State, a new dramedy about faith, politics, and the Twitter, packs plenty of humor, raves Time Out New York. HuffPost calls it powerful. It's the play NPR wishes every member of Congress would see. Now performing at New World Stages. Buy tickets at churchandstatetheplay.com. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. We all knew it wouldn't be long after January 20th before people would start calling for the impeachment of Donald Trump. But my guest today says it's more than just wishful thinking. He predicts a Trump impeachment within the next 4 years, and he even thinks he knows how it'll happen. Now, I realize that political prognostication has been a dicey business of late, but before you dismiss my guest today as just another out-of-touch, soothsaying political pundit, consider that Professor Alan J. Lichtman has successfully predicted the outcome of every U.S. presidential election since 1984. Including Donald Trump's 2016 upset, which practically no one saw coming. Alan J. Lichtman is Distinguished Professor of History at American University in Washington, D.C., and formerly Associate Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences and Chair of the Department of History. He's the author or co-author of 8 books, including his last book, FDR and the Jews, which was a New York Times Editor's Choice pick, a finalist for the Los Angeles Times Book Prize in History, and the recipient of the National Jewish Book Award. His book, White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award in Nonfiction. And as I mentioned before, his Keys to the White House system has successfully predicted every U.S. presidential election since 1984. And while he did predict Donald Trump's 2016 victory, he says the president has a bumpy road ahead in his new book, The Case for Impeachment. Today, he'll talk about what he sees as the 8 most likely paths to impeaching Donald Trump. And while not surprisingly, the Russia investigation and Trump's myriad conflicts of interest enter into the picture, Professor Lichtman even says Trump's war on women and his position on global warming could lead to impeachable offenses. What's more, he says the president could actually be removed on grounds that he is not mentally fit to hold office. Now, if you think that's far-fetched, he'll discuss the surprising likelihood of Republicans in Congress abandoning Trump in favor of the more traditional conservative, Mike Pence. Alan Lichtman will also give some tips for how Donald Trump could save his presidency and avoid the inevitable impeachment. Step 1, fire Steve Bannon. Coming up with Professor Alan J. Lichtman in just a moment. Alan J. Lichtman is a Distinguished Professor of History at American University in Washington, D.C., and the author or co-author of 8 books. He has successfully predicted the outcome of every U.S. presidential election since 1984 and was one of the few people who predicted Donald Trump's upset victory in 2016. Now he's making another prediction for the president in his new book titled The Case for Impeachment. Dr. Lichtman, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
My great pleasure.
Well, the title certainly says it all, but before we get into that, I do want to ask you about the 2016 election. Your track record is pretty impressive. Like I said, you've predicted the outcome of every presidential election since 1984. Not a lot of pollsters were betting on Trump, but you got it right. What did you base your projection on this year?
Well, let me tell you what I didn't base it on first. Mm-hmm. I didn't base it on the polls. I ignored the pundits. And I did not follow the day-to-day events of the campaign because those are all deceptions. Instead, I relied upon my historically based prediction system called the Keys to the White House, which I have used successfully since 1984. And the Keys to the White House look at the big picture of presidential elections. That is, the theory behind the keys that has worked so well is that presidential elections are essentially referenda on the party holding the White House. In other words, the electorate asks the question, should the party holding the White House get four more years? And my 13 keys are factors that look at the strength and performance of the party in power. And through those keys, I was able to discern the vulnerabilities of the Democrats, which had nothing to do with the campaign. They took a pasting in the midterm elections. Mm-hmm. They were defending an open seat, always tough. They had these pesky third-party candidates running way above their heads. They had a contentious nomination struggle. The Obama administration did not follow up the Affordable Care Act with a comparable domestic accomplishment in the second term, and it didn't follow up the dispatch of bin Laden with a comparable foreign policy triumph in the second term. Those were key vulnerabilities that only the keys to the White House disclosed and enabled me to make up my successful prediction. And let me tell you, took a lot of flack for going against all of the conventional wisdom.
Yeah, I'll bet. Now, which of those keys would you say was the most instrumental in Hillary's defeat or Trump's victory, depending on how you look at it?
Yeah, the beauty of the keys is that you don't have to figure out which is more important. As long as there are six or more keys, any six of my 13, then the party in power is a predicted loser. See, this is the problem with a lot of the conventional prediction systems, which rely on equations. So like they'll have the percentage of the vote for the incumbent party equals some multiplier times the economy, some multiplier times presidential approval. But those multipliers change unpredictably every 4 years. I don't have any multipliers.
Is that the biggest flaw with the polling system, is that we kind of have to play a guessing game at these weighted turnouts and so forth?
That's indeed the biggest flaw. They don't know who is going to vote. So they have to come up with some kind of schematic to screen out likely voters. And those schematics are imperfect. So when they tell you the error margin in the polls is plus and minus 3%, that's just sampling error. That has nothing to do with any of the other errors in the polls, including the likely voter screen. The other problem with the polls is they're misused by journalists and pundits. Mm-hmm. Polls are not predictors. They're just snapshots at any given point in time, which could change unpredictably at the next point in time.
Yeah, and I was amused to read that you got a note, in fact, from President-elect Trump after the election congratulating you on your prediction. What did he say?
It was very brief, and he wrote it on the Washington Post article in which I made predictions, basically just saying, congrats, professor, good call. And I have to say, it was pretty gracious of him. He is the only candidate out of, you know, all the many whose elections I predicted who actually bothered to send me something.
I'm assuming he hasn't sent you anything for the book yet, has he?
Not yet, but I'm waiting for the tweets.
Okay. Well, in this new book, The Case for Impeachment, you outline 8 possible avenues that could lead to President Trump's removal from office. The first one you mentioned, I guess a president doesn't necessarily need to break the law to be impeached, but apparently it certainly doesn't hurt. Obviously, he can be impeached for crimes that he might commit as president, but you say he could also be impeached for illegal acts committed before he even assumed office, huh?
That's right. the Constitution imposes no limits on what the grounds for impeachment might be. It simply says treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors, which, of course, are undefined. And the framers were quite clear in putting the power of impeachment solely in a political body, the Congress. They didn't put it in the courts quite deliberately. So that means you don't have to have a specific crime. And it could certainly be events that occurred before the president took office. In this case, for example, what is so obvious that could lead to impeachment that took place before Inauguration Day or even the election is any possible collusion with the Russians. The Russians, of course, launched this reprehensible attack on our democracy, and the FBI and two congressional committees are investigating possible collusion between the Trump team and the Russians, which, of course, would have occurred before Donald Trump took the oath of office.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get to the Russia issue. But I talked with David K. Johnson a while back about his book on Trump. And certainly there were a lot of things that seemed glaringly illegal in there, lies and acts that Trump has committed prior to being president. What kind of laws might he have broken that you think might be the most likely opportunities for impeachment?
I have a whole chapter on flouting the law, which goes all the way back to pretty clear evidence that he violated the very important Fair Housing Act way back in the 70s when he was president of the real estate company started by his father. Mm-hmm. There's very strong evidence that journalists have found that he broke the Cuban embargo in the 1990s, when breaking the Cuban embargo was a pretty serious crime. And there is also credible evidence that both for clearing the site for Trump Tower and much more recently in his modeling agency, he employed illegal immigrants. In fact, Senator Boxer, upon retiring from the Senate, called for an investigation into Trump's modeling agency and its employment of illegal immigrants. That might be something that the House could seize upon, because attacks on illegal immigrants were so central to Trump's campaign for president.
Yeah.
And these things would become more persuasive if combined, of course, with acts committed while as president. They would add some strength to an impeachment case that could combine the history of Donald Trump with the current activities as president of Donald Trump.
Now, theoretically, they could impeach him for these acts even if he's not charged or prosecuted for them, right?
That's correct. The impeachment does not require the commission of an indictable crime. That's very clear. And if you go back to the debates in the Constitutional Convention, their idea of impeachment was this would be the ultimate safeguard of democracy against a rogue president who was broadly abusing presidential power, whether or not that led to a particular indictable crime under the law. And certainly judges, if not necessarily presidents, because there are so few examples, have been impeached for misconduct that was never charged in terms of a criminal act.
You also bring up the violation of the Emoluments Clause as possible grounds for impeachment. Remind folks what that is again.
This is very important. The Emoluments Clause was put into the Constitution by the Founding Fathers to prevent foreign interference with our democracy. The Emoluments Clause basically says, to summarize, that a president cannot receive anything of value, an emolument, from a foreign government, their agents, or even corporations or banks controlled by foreign governments. And the prohibition is absolute. It doesn't require a quid pro quo. Why is this in the Constitution? It wasn't an afterthought. It was very central because, you know, at the time we were a fledgling, a new republic, and the framers feared that our officials could be corrupted by rich and powerful countries like France or Great Britain. And here's why Trump is so vulnerable to violating the Emoluments Clause, the remedy for which is impeachment. He has not divested his business holdings. Yeah, he might have turned his day-to-day operations over to his children, but he still benefits. He still gets emoluments. He gets things of value from his foreign operations, which certainly is arguably a violation of the Emoluments Clause. We saw, for example, that he recently got some very potentially lucrative trademarks from none other than China at the very time that he was moving away, it seems, from his to China policy. And of course, he did never fulfilled his promise to declare China a currency manipulator from on the first day of his presidency. And he certainly hasn't really tried to fundamentally challenge what he says was China cheating us and exploiting us on trade. But again, violation of the Emoluments Clause doesn't require a quid pro quo.
Yeah, I have to say his meeting with President Xi kind of seemed surprisingly chummy given his rhetoric during the election.
A complete turnaround in his approach to China. Now, he's recently said, well, you know, now we need China to help us with North Korea, so I'm not going to declare them a currency manipulator. Of course, he had many, many weeks before he met with the Chinese with regard to North Korea to fulfill his promise to declare them a currency manipulator and to fulfill his promise to try to rectify what he saw as the exploitation of trade relations by China. He's backed off all of that.
Yeah, and this is not just a problem in terms of foreign influence, but even domestically, companies doing business with his company.
Huge problem.
You know, he says that he's not involved in the day-to-day operations. He says his sons Eric and Donald Jr. are running things. But do the proceeds still flow into his pockets, or does it go into some sort of trust? How does that work?
It does not go into some sort of trust.
Really?
He did not divest himself. So if his businesses or businesses that license his name profit, then Trump profits as well. So he's broken the precedent. But I understand he would have taken a financial hit by selling off his businesses. But you know, he's a billionaire. He still would have been a billionaire. And no one forced him to run for president of the United States. So look at domestic businesses. He's got, you know, who knows how many scores, maybe hundreds of domestic business interests. So many decisions of the Trump administration are going to affect the profitability of his domestic businesses. Decisions on labor, on taxes, on regulation, on trade. And the problem with conflicts of interest is really simple. The American people should not be guessing. The Congress should not be guessing about where America's national interest leads off and Trump's personal pocketbook interests kick in. That's why it was so important that he had to divest. And he hasn't. And that could come back to haunt him in terms of impeachment, both in terms of the Emoluments Clause and running afoul of conflicts of interest here at home.
And I imagine it must make it rather difficult for us to root out these conflicts when he says that he's still not going to release his tax returns.
That makes it so difficult to figure out just exactly what his interests are. Mm-hmm. And his excuse is truly pretextual. Yeah. There is no law, no regulation saying that you can't release tax returns that are under audit. That's just something he made up. In fact, every president automatically gets their tax returns audited every year. And for decades, presidents have routinely released their tax returns. Even Richard Nixon released tax returns that were under audit. So clearly, the inference has to be that Trump has something pretty serious to hide. And it could involve violations of the Emoluments Clause. It could involve violations of conflicts of interest at home. I know he's not directly covered domestically by the usual conflicts of interest laws, but there are laws like the Stock Act that cover the president and kind of prevent the president's family, for example, from profiting from inside information from the president. And it doesn't have to be a legal violation. If he is putting his domestic profitability above the national interests, that's an abuse of presidential power that should be enough at least to consider impeachment.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Professor Alan J. Lichtman when we come back in just a moment. If you're interested in my conversation with Alan Lichtman, then you should check out his new book, The Case for Impeachment. And right now, you can download the audio version of his book for free with a special promotion just for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickassnews for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, which can be The Case for Impeachment by my guest today, Professor Alan J. Lichtman, or any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickassnews. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to the show. And you also say his flagrant disregard for the truth could backfire on him as well. Now, if I was to bet on any one of these, this would probably be the one that I'd pick. Some might say, you know, he's gotten away with it so far. What reason do we have to think that he's suddenly going to get his comeuppance now? But you seem to bring up the possibility that he, kind of like Clinton, might perjure himself in one of these many lawsuits that are pending against him or might come up against him.
That's right. That's where his flagrant disregard for the truth can come back to bite him and bite him hard. He could be caught in the same impeachment trap as Bill Clinton, not telling the truth under oath. And this is tied to something else that I point out in the book, Trump's war on women. You know, It's astounding. We have Bill O'Reilly, the king of cable, driven out of his cable slot because of serious allegations of sexual harassment. And we have sitting in the White House a guy who openly bragged about sexually assaulting women. And we have sitting in the White House a guy who's had accusations from about a dozen women of sexual assault and harassment. And one of those women, a former Apprentice contestant, Summer Zervos, is suing him, not for sexual harassment, because the statute is pretty well passed on that probably, but for defamation, for calling her charges against him phony, lies, made up. And her lawyer is a celebrity lawyer, Gloria Allred, a staunch feminist who has said she wants to get Donald Trump to be testifying in this lawsuit under oath. And she hopes the Republicans in Congress will hold him to the same standards of truth that they held Bill Clinton. Now, the Trump lawyers, of course, are trying to squash this lawsuit. They're trying to get rid of it. Well, Bill Clinton couldn't get rid of the Paula Jones sexual harassment lawsuit that started the avalanche that led to his impeachment. And the courts have said, we'll consider lawsuits on a case-by-case basis. But the Trump lawyers have come up with an interesting argument. They're saying this lawsuit should be quashed because the Supreme Court decision saying you can consider lawsuits against a president if they don't relate to his official duties case by case applied only to a lawsuit filed in federal court. This lawsuit is filed in state court. And of course, Allred has responded quite reasonably in saying, why should the venue matter? That's not the critical point to be considered. So this lawsuit could go forward and Donald Trump could be caught in an impeachment trap. And there are other lawsuits pending against Donald Trump as well.
That seems like the easiest way to trap him for his enemies, just to file a lawsuit, because given his propensity for stretching the truth and outright lying, if you just get him in a courtroom, it almost seems like it's going to be hard for him to resist.
It's going to be very hard for him to revert the patterns of more than 40 years. But yeah. I think maybe more likely, depending on the outcomes of those investigations, would be some kind of collusion with the Russians. Mm-hmm. If it turns out, and we don't know yet,
yeah,
that members of his team were colluding with the Russians, and he knew about it, that is a federal crime. It's called misprision of treason, the failure to report treasonous acts. And collusion with an attack on our democracy, I believe, would qualify as treason. And then if, heaven forbid, Trump himself in any way was colluding with the Russians, then he himself could be charged with treason. Again, we don't know, but I got to tell you, the Trump administration's response to this whole controversy about the Russian connection smacks of a Richard Nixon type of cover-up. Conceal, deflect, deceive, lie. And then when you're caught and you have nowhere to go, say, oh, these contacts were all innocuous anyway. Just like the Nixon administration claimed that Watergate was nothing more than a third-rate burglary. It's a lot of smoke here.
Yeah.
And there's a fair chance there's some fire. And we should know, you know, sometime in the next few months.
Does it make logical sense to you that multiple campaign officials were just going rogue and coordinating with Russian officials without the president's knowledge? I mean, what would they have to gain from that?
Well, that's a very good point. And one of the Lichtman rules of politics is the person at the top always knows. It's never just the subordinates. It's easy to blame it on the subordinates, but the guy at the top, in my view, always knows. I don't know the facts here, but you know, as a general rule, it's not just subordinates acting in a rogue way. And let me tell you something. There is also some very powerful circumstantial evidence of a quid pro quo. And that is, Donald Trump couldn't have cared less about the Republican platform. Nobody cares about platforms. And yet his team cared about one thing about the Republican platform, and that is a plank led by Ted Cruz to provide aid to the anti-Russian forces in the Ukraine. And that was the one platform plank that the Trump team went in and scotched. And the guy who was in charge of this, a guy named J.D. Gordon, and Paul Manafort particularly, Paul Manafort lied. The campaign chair said, oh, no, we had nothing to do with that, had nothing to do with the Trump team. Well, this guy, J.D. Gordon, who was in charge of it, just recently said, I've got to confess, that was a Trump operation. And just shortly after that, you got these dumps from WikiLeaks.
I mean, if he were actually charged with treason, that would be wholly unprecedented, since I suppose no incumbent government official has ever been charged with treason, right?
Correct. You did have charges of a former Vice President Aaron Burr, but that was after he was out of office. That's right. Treason has not been leveled against a high government official in the history of the country.
You mentioned abuse of power a moment ago. What would constitute abuse of power in this case? I mean, Bush and Obama signed a slew of executive orders. So what could Trump possibly do that takes it a step too far?
Now, let me say, you know, if you were to take all the transgressions of Richard Nixon and summarize them, they would be summarized under the abuse of power. He used the office of the presidency to advance his own goals and his own partisan purposes and abuse power. My chapter on abuse of power is a case study of the first travel ban. And I think there were many abuses, maybe not yet rising to the level of possible impeachment, but certainly indicative of a president who was not very cautious about the use of presidential power. First, and even promulgating the travel ban, he trampled on decades of American tradition, affirmed by every president of the last 50 years, including Ronald Reagan, of not discriminating against people based upon their nationality. And he issued the ban in such a slipshod, such a rapid way that it immediately caused all kinds of confusion, hardships, problems for people. That's not how you properly use presidential power. And according to news reports, I don't know if this is true, he did not consult with the leadership of Congress, but brought in congressional staffers to work for him and then had them sign confidentiality agreements. That's a potential breach of the separation of powers. And in defending this first travel ban, his lawyers claimed kind of an absolute presidential power that the courts could not review. Very Nixonian. And what he did in defending the travel ban when he got negative court decisions was demean the judges and demean the judicial system itself, breaching the critical separation of powers that is so essential to protecting our freedoms and liberties. So there's a lot there just in one act, maybe not enough yet to impeach the president, but certainly indicative of a president who plays fast and loose with presidential powers. And remember, impeachment can take some time. It took over 5 years to impeach Bill Clinton, over 5 years for the near impeachment and resignation of Richard Nixon, 3 years to impeach Andrew Johnson. We're not even 100 days into this administration. But time is telescoped under Donald Trump. It feels almost like 100 weeks.
Yeah.
And ultimately, although the power of impeachment is formally lodged in Congress, I believe impeachment will only occur if the American people demand that. That's why I wrote this book, as a guide to the American people to monitor the Trump administration. It's not a book that's partisan. I don't quote any Democrats, any political opponents of Donald Trump in this book. But to give American people guidance, I go through past impeachments, the process of impeachment, the prior history of Donald Trump, and the record of the first couple of months of the Trump administration.
Well, if Republicans control the House and Senate, isn't impeachment somewhat unlikely?
Another Lichtman rule of politics is that for politicians, their first priority is self-preservation. Mm-hmm. And Republicans turn against Donald Trump if they think he becomes a political liability. Every Republican in Congress is up for re-election in 2018. And if they think Trump is a millstone around their neck, they could turn against him. Remember, if the Democrats stand firm on impeachment, it only takes, as I point out in my book, about 2 dozen Republicans to turn. That's only 10% of Republicans in Congress. About a third of Republicans in the House Judiciary Committee turned against Richard Nixon. And of course, if the charges were serious enough, if they involved misprision of treason or treason, then I think even Republicans would have to act. And finally, Donald Trump has no long-term relationship with the Republicans in Congress. He's attacked and demeaned many of them, and they might much prefer to see Mike Pence as president, who's a down-the-pipe, predictable, conservative Republican and not a loose cannon like Donald Trump. And few people know that under the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, if Mike Pence becomes president, he gets to pick his own vice president, and you could have the Republican dream team of Mike Pence and Paul Ryan.
Yeah, I have a feeling that there are a lot of Republicans who wouldn't shed a tear if Donald Trump got impeached and they had Mike Pence and Paul Ryan to deal with. The final possibility you bring up is an interesting one because I don't think it's technically impeachment, but it's one that's kind of been discussed quite a bit recently since Donald Trump gave his bizarre press conference rant on the media and then accused President Obama of wiretapping him. You say he could be removed from office on the grounds that he is mentally unfit to serve. Now, this one's tricky. It's a little different than the typical impeachment proceedings. What would that entail?
It's very tricky, and it has nothing to do with impeachment. It's something that's in the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, which was adopted fairly recently in 1967. Under the 25th Amendment, a president can be removed without going through the impeachment process if the president is unfit to serve. And the amendment doesn't say whether that means a physical disability or a mental disability. It's a very difficult process. It requires a majority of the cabinet and the vice president to declare the president unfit. And of course, they're appointed by the president. And ultimately, removal requires a 2/3 vote of both houses of Congress. It's never been used. But for the first time in decades, mental health professionals, and I'm not one, mental health professionals have broken the so-called Goldwater Rule, was instituted by their professional association after Barry Goldwater's unsuccessful campaign in 1964 when mental health professionals had pronounced him unfit. They've now broken that rule. And some 2 dozen mental health professionals have gone public and said they don't think that Donald Trump has the mental stability to carry out the duties of president. And this is particularly important now because we're dealing with the possibility of a war on the Korean Peninsula and the possibility of that war becoming nuclear. Mm-hmm. And of all times when we need someone who's calm and cool and stable in the White House, this is that time.
Yeah, I imagine it would be hard to pull off, though, because
very hard.
You know, if he gets wind that there's a mutiny in his own cabinet, can't he just fire all of those people and hire new ones before they go and pull this?
I don't think that'll work, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, it'd be very hard for the vice president majority of his cabinet to turn against him. I got to mention one other possible, and this is impeachment, one of the possible ground for impeachment, because I'm the only one who's really come up with this. And that is impeachment for a crime against humanity. Now, typically, we think of crimes against humanity as genocide, like what happened in Cambodia in the 1970s. But just recently, the International Criminal Court has prioritized crimes against the environment, which clearly would include catastrophic climate change. In 2009, a group of businessmen wrote an open letter published in the New York Times to President Obama, in which they said, the science is irrefutable that unless we take strong action against climate change, the results will be catastrophic for our planet. Guess who signed that open letter 8 years ago? Donald Trump, Eric Trump, Ivanka Trump, and Donald Trump Jr. Well, what's changed in 8 years? The science has become stronger. The danger has become more imminent. The only thing that's changed is Donald Trump's political calculations, which have now led him not just to stop progress in fighting climate change, but to throw in reverse efforts to fight climate change, which could accelerate the dangers from floods and seawater rise that could inundate coastal cities, inundate island nations, the dangers from fires that consume homes and cropland, the dangers from drought that cause starvation and make parts of the world even uninhabitable. What could be more dangerous, as Donald Trump himself told us, than catastrophic climate change? And throwing into reverse our efforts could be interpreted as a crime against humanity. Now, we're not part of the International Criminal Court.
Right, I was just going to say.
Yeah, but anyone anywhere could make a complaint, and that could lead to an investigation which could reverberate back here at home and lead to an impeachment investigation. It's pretty far out, but it may be the most dangerous thing that Donald Trump is doing.
Yeah, I mean, it would be strange if they went after the president of the United States, but not China or India or Russia or all of the other worst offenders, much less dictators like Kim Jong-un or Assad, who are committing more blatant or clearer crimes against humanity or war crimes. You never know.
That's problems for those countries. We have our own problem with Donald Trump. And the United States has got to be the leader here. Yeah. We can't be a laggard. We can't be turning back the clock on efforts to fight climate change. That's going to reverberate all over the world. You know that.
Yeah. You also throw the president a bone in the end and give him some tips on how he could save his presidency and avoid impeachment. I won't go through all of them, but you do say he should fire Steve Bannon ASAP. Now, this reminds me of something that Hugh Hewitt said to me a few months ago. He said, if Trump insulates himself with yes men and his insiders, it's a Watergate-like recipe for corruption, dysfunction, and eventually impeachment. Is Steve Bannon the most dangerous loose cannon in his inner circle?
I think he's the most dangerous advisor to Donald Trump. You know, under his watch, and I give lots of examples in the book, Breitbart.com spewed out racist and religious bigotry openly. And I give like five or six examples in the book. Plus, as I point out in the book, he doesn't want to develop policy that leads to a consensus and gets things done for the benefit of the American people. He wants to destroy basically the status quo. And that's obviously a very dangerous thing to be doing. And, you know, if Trump were to follow that path, that could lead to impeachment. So Steve Bannon, you're fired is one of my recommendations for Donald Trump.
Before we go, you want to make any predictions for 2018 or 2020?
Well, I think if things keep going as they are, one of two things are going to happen. Enough Republicans in Congress will come around and get rid of Donald Trump before the midterms. Or if things continue to go downhill and the president has approval ratings that are so low, you know, historically for an early presidency around 40%, you could see 2018 as a wave election that creates a Democratic majority.
Do you make any kind of predictions other than politics, like the World Series or the finale of The Bachelor?
You know, I've been asked about The Bachelor. I'm probably too old to make predictions about that. But I have been asked to make predictions for gamblers, and I refuse to do it because I don't want to wind up in the Potomac River wearing cement overshoes. So I stay safe.
Smart man. Well, once more, the book is called The Case for Impeachment. Dr. Alan J. Lichtman, thanks for talking with me.
Great questions. Enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Ben.
Thanks again to Professor Alan Lichtman for joining me on the podcast. You can order The Case for Impeachment on Amazon or download the audio version of his book for free with a special offer at audibletrial.com/kickassnews. And follow Professor Lichtman on Twitter at Alan Lichtman. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. Don't forget to take our listener survey. It only takes 5 minutes at podsurvey.com/kick. You can visit Kick-Ass News on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And be sure to recommend Kick-Ass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews or click on the donate button at kickassnews.com. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.